Rock 2 FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2 FM. Thanks to the two Johnnies, it's Tuesday the 17th of May and this is Game On. Coming up today as the Premier League run-in rumbles on, Stephen Kelly and Mark Langdon reflect on Arsenal's woes and tonight's chance for Liverpool to bring the title race to the final day.
And you guys have to sit here and say it, and other people say, and he's, well, when does he stop whining, stuff like this, because nobody else is doing it. You all don't think about it for a second. He says, oh, it's tough, huh? Well, maybe it would have been better if you play on Thursday. Yeah, would have been slightly better. So 120 minutes and then Tuesday. Come on, that's really massive. So we will see. But again, I can't wait to play the game. Now we know when we play.
In Gaelic Games, Damien Lawler will explain the end to the expenses dispute between the GA and GPA. And in rugby, we'll have Stephen Ferris on the latest chapter of Leinster's winning run as Contum Pony confirms his exit.
We are drilling and working for that fifth star in the jersey, and that's the most important thing. And now it comes La Rochelle, who beat us last year in semi-final, and there's a goal for us to go. And definitely it will be a different game, and it starts from zero, and we need to prepare accordingly because they are a brilliant team.
Plus, we've jockey Shane Cross on the Guineas Festival at the Curragh and all the rest of today's news. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. We are going to get straight into the news of the GPA and the GAA reaching an agreement on a player's charter, ending that dispute that has been rocking on over the last few months over expenses which saw players and some managers avoid media duties earlier in the season. Damien Lawler, GAA reporter with RTE Sport, is with me on the line. Damien, there's peace. Peace at last.
Peace at last for a while, Marie, and hopefully it'll be sorted out now. There's a charter in place for 2022. It'll be renewed or re-agreed in 2023, but for now there is one there to get us through until the end of the season, Marie. And there was a general press release of about three or four lines there yesterday just saying everybody's happy and it's all looking good, but I just dug a bit deeper into it yesterday evening, then with a few sources here and there. It's probably good news for students, first of all. They get an extra 15 cent a mile for the season, and that only goes up to an extra €250 max a year, but it's something anyway. There had been a lot of talk in recent times that students were missing out, Marie, and were suffering with the, well, look, let's be honest, with the cost of diesel and the cost of living and the cost of travel back home. The other thing too is there's no restriction now on the number of players in a squad who can actually get expenses. That had been capped at 32 during the COVID years, and the GPA wanted that gone. And I guess the key issues are the two or three things that I'm chatting to you about. They were all probably temporarily agreed during COVID. They seem to have worked well in reducing maybe, I suppose, manpower and resources and expenditure across the board, and the GAA probably were keen to keep them going forward and maintaining that no team needed to train four times a week. But the GPA were saying that they were agreed in good faith for a COVID period only, and they should be relifted now or lifted again. So I suppose the big thing now is how many nights a week can you train? And in essence, teams are going to be allowed to train four nights a week. There was a big argument then about that a few weeks ago over if there was a fourth session a week, who would actually pay for it? The GAA were arguing that it had to be organised locally, and the GPA were saying, no, it's not our remit. You need to sort that out and pay for it centrally. So it's a hybrid of both is the outcome. The expenses will be submitted locally by your local county board and paid for centrally by Croke Park. So basically there's a compromise there. They're the three key issues, Marie. As you rightly say, it came after the likes of myself and yourself were basically just left on sidelines with nobody to talk to after after games. And you know, it's tough going because I felt it most was Galway beating Mayo and Castlebar. And Damien Comer got man of the match, and Damien's a good guy and he's a good talker, and just a lot of focus on the Galway forwards and that Galway team in recent years. And look, they don't have any silverware won yet, but that was a big, big win, and you'd have loved to got his thoughts and you'd love to got a bit of an insight. And you'd love to get it for the viewer at home. It's nothing got to do with me, don't get me wrong. But your job is there to try and get the best, most enlightening, informative material out of these guys and get it into the viewer's house at home. So that from a personal, selfish point of view, my own job at the weekend would have been very, very unenjoyable.
Yeah.
When you're not getting access to these guys, because that's what you know yourself. That's what it's all about, mm-hmm. Marie, you know. So anyway, that's over with now, the last couple of weeks. And thank God, being honest with you.
Yeah, Damien, like it does feel though that we're hearing from players. I know there has been a bit of a standoff of late, but it does feel like we're hearing from players less and less though as the years go by.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, okay, it's a long, 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 long time ago now, but I remember like back in 1999, I was only a kind of a kid reporter myself and just out of college, and I'd done the Cork football press night. Got to sit down with three or four of those lads, but my sports editor at the time said to me on a Friday before the All-Ireland final, we need another Cork player interview. And like, even at that stage, you know, I was looking with my eyes wide open, but I duly rung Philip Clifford, who was 19 years of age. He was captain of Cork, and you know, there was no answer, but at least I was able to go back to my boss and say I tried. But Philip rung back about half an hour later and he basically said to me, yeah, I'll chat away, no butter. And I actually said, I can't believe you're doing it. And he just said, I have to walk in front of how many thousand people at the time in Croke Park, maybe 70,000 people at the time, in 2 days' time. Chatting to you shouldn't be any great stretch. And, you know, now, don't get me wrong, that was the extreme. You're never mm-hmm. going to ever get access like that anywhere near that ever again. But, like, there was a time when I was starting off whereby you actually were in the dressing rooms, you were getting to see people and you were getting to chat, and the colour and the insight and the kind of perspective that you got from going in there was unreal. Now, I'm not a dinosaur. I understand that life moves on, but you can't even get to the dressing room door hardly these days, and everything's pretty much stage managed. You've got PROs, but apart from that, you've got, you know, who do their best. You've got team officers, and sometimes the team officers are there to make life very, very fluid for the media and help us. And other times then it's just like maybe try and not give anybody much of an insight. And teams are so secretive. I'd say mm-hmm. the debrief after games, I'd say they're well coached in terms of saying nothing anyway. But look, to be fair, when you do get access, you know, you can get some great stuff. But I think it's all very sterile and very clinical compared to what it was now. Now, with the Talchin Cup, I'm looking forward to that because hopefully we'll be able to ring lads and there might be a bit more acceptable to helping you out. And I certainly found that with the lower tiers in hurling. And it'll be a good test there now because the Talchin Cup needs publicity and PR. I'm certainly willing to give it. I know my colleagues are as well. But you'll be looking for a degree of accessibility as well, you know. So I think somewhere along the line, journalists stopped ringing players and it wasn't made possible for them to do so. It does happen sporadically. Obviously, lots of journalists have very good relationships with players. Sometimes players don't want to be seen to have good relationships with journalists because of what it might mean for their places or their place in the setup. But what's happening more and more is that over the years, it just became a sponsorship launch or an event. And, you know, you were specifically asked not to contact these players outside of these events. And,
yeah.
It's a million miles away from the 90s in terms of the golden years for Hurling Marie that I grew up with as a journalist. But sure, look, you know, life moves on. I guess there's nobody going to be worrying about it from the journalist point of view anyway.
Yeah, it is. I would just love to have seen something in a charter where that was built in, that there was going to be more access to players, even if it was organised at least that leading up to the big games, a few days beforehand, a week beforehand, that you had the opportunity to even just get 5 or 6 minutes. But it just seems that when the games come, when the season starts, the shutters are pulled down and you just haven't got a hope. But anyway, maybe the next charter.
And Marie, do you know what the gas thing is? I don't know about you, but my style anyway, I'd hardly mention the games because you're more interested in your background, the context of the journey where you've got to try and get on the field and wear a jersey, stuff that's going on in your life.
Yeah,
I'm way more interested in that because I've grown to learn the game looking ahead is just going to be a cliche thing anyway. Like, you're getting the cliches the moment the final whistle is over in the game. Like, people aren't even, like, I won't mention the team or county, but one player last year was involved in a very high profile victory and he came over to do a man of the match interview with me. He was nearly dragged away and tried to debrief, you know, this sort of stuff before you got to chat to him. And I'm just shaking my head saying, it's one of the biggest victories for the player in his career. Just let him enjoy it, you know. And I just think people look into it too much, Marie. It's just like an opinion and an article or a broadcast piece. And You know, I mean, half the time as a journalist, you're just trying to bring a bit of colour into it or a bit of information. That's it.
For sure, Damien. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to change anymore. But I think when you look down the ranks, though, at the likes of the miners and anyone who was watching the scenes in Portlaoise last night between Laois and Offaly, was there 12,000 people there? The scenes on the pitch were just unbelievable. All the kids out playing. And that's what it is all about. OK, you mightn't get to chat or to do your interviews, but at least there's people still going and there's still a massive amount of interest.
Yeah, and they're allowed on the pitch, Marie, and they're allowed to have a few pucks and like 12,500 because Laois and Offaly, like, I mean, to get to that stage is probably unprecedented for both of those counties. 22 years since Offaly won a Leinster title, and that, in fairness to the Laois setup, like with the Satanta and Cúchulainn's programmes that they started 10 years ago, and Cheddar and Critchley, these guys would have started all that and Leinster Council would have helped, but you know, they've kept players coming through. I always maintain they need more help now from Central GAA. Mm-hmm. They need more help in terms of GDO, more revenue, more promotion. But in terms of Offaly, they're starting to wake up now again. They have been working hard for the last few years and you can see the fruits of it coming through. And yeah, like the characters there, you've seen a good few mullets from Offaly in the last couple of years with the under 20s and the minors. And Leo O'Connor is a great, great talker as well, Marie. And as you say, down through the tiers, in fairness to ladies football in Camogie, they're brilliant to deal with. Get lots of access there. In fairness to the Joe McDonagh, Christy Ring Cup teams, Laurie Maher, Nicky Rackard, you get as much access there as you want. And just would be lovely to see you come back up to senior level. But look, maybe it's gone too far. Maybe it might twist back slowly the other way again. I don't know.
Well, you did manage to catch up with Leo O'Connor and had a chat with him about whether this is another step in Offaly's rejuvenation.
This is definitely another major step, Damien, in Offaly's progression as a hurling county. They really need to step up to the plate. There's a lot of hard work to be done ahead of us. But I think that with the county board, the way they're set up at the moment, I think there's a willingness there to do it. Martin Cashin has done absolutely immense work in the past. Creaney Carroll has now taken over the role, and I've no doubt that Creaney knows what lies ahead as well to improve Offaly hurling. So from that point of view, I think it's a major step up in Offaly's favour, the result last night, and I think it'll bring out the people and get them behind the teams again. Seeing the hurling team out in the McDonagh Cup this weekend, so that's vital that these guys are given the support again the weekend. Without shadow of a doubt, we got huge support last night, and you can see the rejuvenation of Offaly hurling and football.
It would be great if they could follow through on this, because when you've Offaly involved in the top tier, they bring so much to a competition, Damien.
They do, Marie. To be honest with you, even their jersey does it for me, to be fair. And I've always associated with them with having a go and having a cut on the field in both hurling and football. They've always been fairly open and honest off the field. They're a fantastic county for the GAA. They have their own tradition as well. And there was a time maybe when Offaly footballers were going to Croke Park for All-Irelands very, very often, but anybody maybe aged 25 to 28 wouldn't have seen that. And Brian Carlow was chatting to him on Sunday, and he'd have had 14 years in the Offaly jersey, and they were a tough slog as well, Marie. So I think the GAA does need them to come back. I think they are slowly getting there, but they've an awful long way to go. But look at Michael Dignan has got maybe up to 11 GDAs now in the county, or is working towards that. There was much less. And just the look they've got their act together, and Shane Lowry coming on board last year, the Faithful Fields training facility, you know, the Joe McDonagh Cup hurlers this weekend as well. There's a bit of a buzz back, and obviously the 20 footballers last year. So I think certainly in terms of Leinster, in terms of hurling and football, having Offaly there again would be massive. And I think Leo O'Connor's done a great job, Marie, because he took that job on during COVID. And, like, Offaly, I think, had 3 lockdowns in COVID, if not 4. They were one of those designated counties alongside Kildare and Laois. So what he's done, and the gas thing is, he got a load of kids doing their junior cert now as well, Marie. So lots of challenges there, but he got through them.
And before we finish up, Damien, Sunday is going to be epic if you're a hurling fan, and RTÉ are going to simultaneously cover the ending to the Munster Championship. Super Sunday for sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't have seen this coming last weekend. I thought it was fairly cut and dried, but you know, look, I think the headline in the Nina Garrison this week is Colin Bonner, and the headline is, "So you're saying there's a chance." Now, there probably is a chance, but it's a small one. But I think if you're looking at anything this weekend, it's the rejuvenation of Cork, and maybe where are Waterford now? Because I would have had Waterford down as a team that could potentially beat Limerick, or certainly the closest to them. So, surprised to see that maybe they haven't made it through at this stage. You know, Cork impressed with their resilience last week. Somebody said to me, well, sure, they had to stand up and show something, they had to fight back. But sometimes when you get on a bit of a run and it's not going well, it is hard to stand up. And Tipperary will have to stand up at the weekend, and I think they have to win by a certain amount and hope the results goes elsewhere. Hope Clare win in Ennis for them to get through. So it's unlikely Tipperary will. Cork have a good chance. I'm not so sure where Waterford stand, and I suppose you have to see what will happen against your team on Sunday. But I have to say, Marie, Clare really impressed me last weekend. Their physicality, their work rate. Even though only two forwards scored, the rest of the forwards really got back and put a shift in. And like they're working non-stop for Brian Lohan, and I'd be interested to see what Clare will do. That Munster final will be spicy. That's June the 5th, and I can't wait for that. But look, as you say, Marie, simulcast this weekend. It's going to be very, very interesting to see who gets out of it. You'd like all the momentum is with Clare, and I don't think he's going to ease off the throttle at this stage, because he still has 2 weeks to go to the Munster final, and it's sink or swim for Waterford. And you know what happens with Liam Cahill then? Like, does he stay another year or does he go? So he'll hope that they win and the result goes for him and Thurles, and that Waterford can continue on their journey. But it's going to be difficult for them. And I suppose, Marie, to finish it off, what was once looking like just 10 days ago as being maybe a dead rubber of a Sunday is now turned into a super Sunday in some shape or form.
And is a fact.
I think the round robin format, Munster Council, where games are home, is a good format.
Yeah, I think they'll be talking about that encounter between Clare and Limerick and Ennis last week for a long time to come. Damien Lawler, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break now, but then we're back with Stephen Ferris talking all things rugby.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. It is 22 minutes past six and it is now time to talk rugby. I'm delighted to say that Stephen Ferris joins me on the line. Stephen, there's a lot of rugby news today, I must say, so we might as well just get stuck into it. Let's start with the Ireland squad and the fact that they have added two midweek fixtures against the Maori All Blacks on their summer tour, in addition to the three test series against New Zealand. You'd have to think they're going to need a very big squad for that trip.
Yeah, they certainly are. Jeez, I thought, a number of years ago, a three-test tour to New Zealand just playing the All Blacks three times was tough enough, but to add in two games against the Maori, it's really going to be a long, old trip. But, you know, Andy Farrell's come out today and said that, you know, it's a huge positive. It's a real test. It's a real measure of where his squad is going to be. I think he knows that he's going to have to maybe go down the pecking order a little bit in some of the games as well, give other guys opportunities. And, you know, if he's to build a squad that's hopefully going to go on and perform really well in a World Cup in 2023, you know, this tour could be the making of some of these young lads. So, yeah, I think we were all expecting, you know, the three tests, one against the Maori and then a game against a club side midweek. There was chat of, you know, the Hurricanes or something like that, but that obviously hasn't happened. And two against the Maori. So yeah, it's if you're a travelling fan heading out there, or you're an expat living out there and going to the game, it's going to be an awesome 3 or 4 weeks, but it's going to be very, very telling on the lads. I'm sure there'll be some very tired bodies come the end of the season. A lot of these Irish boys are playing for Leinster. They're in a Heineken Cup final. They're probably going to go, you know, probably closer, nearly there in the URC, and then they've got to go and back all that up with a 3-year test tour in New Zealand plus a couple of games. So it's going to be a long old season, Marie.
Yeah, and then they'll be straight into the new season when they come back as well. It just comes around so quick, so for sure. And as you said, then into a Rugby World Cup. But it's going to provide certain players with the opportunity to really prove themselves against such quality opposition. And as you said, like, there's quite a run of games there. So if you're putting your hand up, it's probably a really good place to do it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's vital over the next 2 or 3 weeks that some of the guys on the fringes, even somebody like Craig Casey, you know, who's running Conor Murray very, very close for that 9 jersey for Munster, if he can get a couple of really good games under his belt, he's probably going to play against the All Blacks at some stage in one of the tests in the summer. And then you go further down the pecking order, many scrum halves are actually going to bring. You know, is Luke McGrath in the pitcher? Probably not. Is Nathan Doak thereabouts? We all thought he was going to get drafted in, possibly, at the Six Nations as a development player. That didn't happen. Would you bring him over? You know, if he finishes the season really strong for Ulster, then maybe he could get a look in and maybe get one of the games against the Mary. So, yeah, I think Andy Farrell is going to, you know, have to bring a really big squad with him, something like 35 players. There's going to be a couple of injuries as well, I'm sure. So, you know, everybody's going to have to keep their form going right until the end of the season and make sure that they keep themselves in that shop window as well and keep playing at the top of their game.
Does he leave any of the senior players at home, do you reckon? Would they want to stay at home?
Like, you maybe ask me about Johnny Sexton. Like, many games has Johnny Sexton got left in an Irish jersey before he actually hangs the boots up? And you know, he said that he's going to take Ireland to a Rugby World Cup. Hopefully, fingers crossed, he does that. And then after that, he's going to retire. So, you know, he's going to want a little asterisk beside his name saying test winning captain in New Zealand in 2022. That would be lovely to go alongside everything else that he's achieved in the game. So I think he will definitely want to go out there. Will he play every game? Of course he won't. Will he play start two of the test against New Zealand? Probably. Also very good for the, I know we say this quite often, but it's great for the younger lads as well to go out and experience, you know, how professional he is, both on and off the pitch and the standards that he drives. And after all, he is the captain of Ireland as well. So, I think a lot of the senior players will go and they will try and get a couple of results out in New Zealand and come back and hopefully have a successful, you know, season next year off the back of it.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of rugby all right over the next while. But Leinster aren't going to have Felipe Contepone because he is going to leave the province's coaching staff at the end of the season. He's going to take up a role with his native Argentina. He was out speaking to the media about his decision. Let's hear from him.
Yeah, obviously the feeling is, it's a great feeling to have that opportunity. But at the same time, it's been a very tough decision for me. You know, I think... There's no hiding knowing that I've got the one of the best opportunities in my life to come to the best team in the world, you know, in terms of Leinster. So I had a great moments here, and now this opportunity came, and with all the support of Leo and all the staff and Leinster, I took the chance to go back home. You know, there's many other reasons, not only rugby-wise, that made me make that decision. But I'm really happy, and it's a proud. As you know, for any person having the opportunity to play for their country or then to be coach of their country, it's a proud moment, you know. So for me and my family as well.
Yeah, big move there from Contepone. I'd say it's really hard to leave a team like Leinster. And I guess with Argentina, there's a lot of work to be done there too. They obviously have all the tradition, but he has a big job there.
Yeah, he certainly has a big job. I love the way he says that Leinster are the best team in the world. I love that. A bit of confidence there with a couple of big weeks ahead. But yeah, he's done an incredible job there, working alongside Lancaster and, of course, Leo Cullen, steering the ship at the top. And I think the boys have, obviously, a couple of lads, you know, play with Felipe coming to the tail end of his career, but I think he's added a significant amount of energy to Leinster. Anytime you're chatting to any of the boys about him, it's all positive. And of course he will be a big miss, but it's a huge plus for Argentina, obviously getting into the World Cup cycle. And I was chatting to Dan McFarland there a couple of months back, and we were talking, he was obviously involved with the Scottish setup, and he said, you know, obviously it's completely different going back to club, but every coach who has ambitions and wants to coach at the top of their game, international rugby is where it's at. You know, that's where you get the incredible buzzes, running out, taking your side to a World Cup or India Six Nations in front of the huge crowds and the huge televised audiences. And you know, that's what every aspiring coach wants to do. So you know, fair play to Felipe. He's given so much to Leinster, both as a player and as a coach, and I think everybody in Leinster will be sad to see him go, but wishing him all the best at the same time.
Yeah, he's definitely left a legacy there for sure and influenced so many players. They always speak about him and his standards and his leadership. World Rugby today announced that they have moved to limit on-field coaching, the type that was employed by South Africa against the British and Irish Lions last year. So they've approved trials to limit non-playing personnel entering the field during a match. Do you think this is the right move?
If it stops Razzy Erasmus running out onto the pitch, then I'm all for it, to be honest with you. I don't know how many headlines I read throughout the Lions tour about Razzy Erasmus being the water boy, but it's just coaches over the last number of years have probably bent the rules a little bit, or maybe not bent them, but took advantage of some of the rules and been able to manipulate them a little bit. But yeah, it's good that World Rugby's clamping down on that, and I think Razzy Erasmus will be laughing in his home office at the minute reading what World Rugby's just put out today.
Yeah, I hope he sends a nice video reaction like he has done in the past. But one thing's for sure, they will find another way. People always find a way. So we might as well move on to Leinster, because it was announced as well today that Josh Van de Vleer, James Lowe and Caelan Dorris have made the five-man shortlist for the European Rugby Player of the Year award by the governing body ECPOR, which is, I suppose, look, it's not really a surprise when you think how dominant and impressive they are. It was almost a case of how many Leinster players were going to get on it, I thought, anyway.
Yeah. And, like, that's, as a player, 2012, I was on that list myself and heading into the final. Of course, we got hockeyed by Leinster, so ended up not winning that one. But, from a personal point of view, it's you want to be named the best player in Europe. Like, that is, you know, I know you say about the Six Nations, and that's only five games. And I just feel that the European Cup really is a big, big deal for players to try and get that title. So, you know, fair play to the three lads there from Leinster. I think all of them are playing really well. But I think all in all, Josh Van der Vleer for me has just been... I almost questioned Marie, like, maybe three seasons ago. I was like, is Josh Van der Vleer, does he have the physicality? He doesn't really carry the ball that well. Yes, he's good over the ball, but you know, does he read the game as well as other sevens? And then his game has just come on so, so much. And like, for me, he's probably one of the first names on the team sheet with a green jersey or a blue jersey, obviously, with Leinster. So yeah, I think Josh Van der Vleer, if he has a really good game in the final, he may be the one to get his hands on that trophy. But James Lowe, you know, has try scorer in the competition so far, another brace there against Toulouse. Maybe an injury concern about him over the next couple of weeks, but we'll see how he pulls up.
Where did you finish in that Player of the Year, if you don't mind me asking? Did you come second?
Did you come fifth? Rob Carney, I think, won it in 2012, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he got an armchair ride, in fairness, the whole final. Like, we got absolutely trounced up front, but we'll not talk any more about that.
Okay, we'll put that away. Just on Josh Van der Vleer, like, I'd love if somebody wrote like a 5,000 word piece on what he's done in the last 3 years, because he must have worked unbelievably hard to be able to evolve at such a pace and to be able to develop his game almost in tandem with how the game is developing.
Yeah, you know, I think his game has always been there. I think it's always been there. It's just getting the right coaches to bring it out of him, and he has tremendous physicality as well, and I don't think that come out that much 3 or 4 years ago.
That physicality, that kind of that edge, that abrasiveness that you see so often now, is that in a person, or can you coach that?
Yeah, like, I play with a lot of rugby players with a heart the size of a pea, and they look the part, and they go out on the pitch in a big game and they don't perform. And you need big game players in your team if you're going to be successful. And I think Josh Van der Vleer is a big game player. I think maybe, you know, making the steps up, you know, underage rugby, then into Leinster, it just took him a little bit longer to find his feet. But as soon as he's found his feet, he's off and running. And I'm not doubting Josh Van der Vleer's physicality or his appetite for the contact area. That guy is a ferocious competitor, and just thankfully I don't have to play against him, because he's just taken his game to another level. And I think it really helps as well, Marie, when you have a couple of back rowers alongside him that are bringing the best out of him. Caelan Dorris and Jack Conan seem to be doing just that.
Yeah, for sure. Look, we're going to be building up to the Champions Cup final over the next week or so, but I'm already starting to enjoy the build-up with the Ronan O'Gara, Johnny Sexton relationship and how that's going to go and whether there's going to be any kind of tension between them. Look, it's a difficult one because Leinster are such heavy favourites and they've obviously been so good, and that game at the weekend, the Racing La Rochelle one, didn't really set anyone's lives on fire, but can you see anything rather than the expected happening?
I can, yes. Of course, Leinster are favourites going into this match, and if they play to the high standards that they've set themselves all season, then I think they will win. But this La Rochelle team, you know, they put 30 points in Leinster last year. Granted, Johnny Sexton didn't play in that game, but they beat them up a little bit up front. Leinster, I think, gave away 14 penalties in that game. Their discipline wasn't good enough. James Logan yellow carded. You know, they not that they crumbled, but they just gave the La Rochelle team a bit of an in, and La Rochelle took it. You know, they're very big up front. If Will Skelton is rumoured to be back fit, possibly for the final, if that's the case, that's a 130-kilo man you're putting into a second row. Unbelievable player. We've seen him playing for Saracens and La Rochelle over the last number of years, and he's just an absolute beast. And you know, one man like that can really add something. So you know, you have Dante in the centre, just crash ball. I think, you know, Toulouse tried to play too much rugby against Leinster. You know, they tried to play the Toulouse way and run it from everywhere, and you know, that backfired massively. I think La Rochelle will want this to be a really ugly game. A really slow pace, lots of penalties, scrums, mauls, and just try and eke a few penalties out, kick to the corner, and try and grind this Leinster side down. But you know, the attack and flair that we've seen by Leinster over the last couple of weeks has just been a joy to watch. So, yeah, hopefully we get a mixture of both. But yeah, don't underestimate this La Rochelle side, especially when they're going to be coached by a certain Ronan O'Gara, who has beaten Leinster many a times before as a player. So. I just cannot wait for this game to kick off.
Yeah, for sure. And we will be building up to it a lot over the next little while. Stephen Ferris, thank you so much for joining us, and we will talk to you again soon. We're going to take a very quick break now, and then we're back with all of today's football news.
RTE
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It's time to turn our attention to football. I'm delighted to say that Stephen Kelly joins me, and so does Mark Langdon of the Racing Post. Stephen, I'm going to go to you first because we just need to talk about Newcastle and Arsenal and Arsenal's implosion. I know you, as a Spurs fan, are probably not all that surprised.
Not all surprised. Delighted, yes, definitely.
I wanted to leave you say that.
It just couldn't happen to a nicer team. No. Yeah, no, you know what, it's a funny thing because I think it's so much more enjoyable when Tottenham are fighting for a spot with Arsenal. I remember missing out on Champions League with Tottenham last day of the season, Lasagna Gate, 16 years ago, and it's literally haunted me ever since. So this is really nice to see Spurs hopefully going to pip them and don't collapse in the last day of the season. But the game at the Tottenham Stadium was just exceptional. It was a really amazing thing to experience. The atmosphere was off the charts, and I just think that that's kind of hurt Arsenal, and you could see they hadn't fully recovered from that going into the Newcastle game, and then it went from strength to strength. And Newcastle are so confident at the moment. Their atmosphere is amazing. The place is hopping, and that was probably Newcastle's best performance, but Arsenal just couldn't bounce back from it. And it was a huge result for Newcastle and an even bigger result for Spurs.
Yeah, it was for sure. Mark Langdon is with me on the line as well. Mark, is there any way back, really? And I think when you look at Granit Xhaka as well and how critical he was of their team, that you can just see how things are going so wrong there.
Yeah, I mean, it was an awful performance. You know, Newcastle did play well, but right from early on, Ramsdale nearly conceded a goal with a clearance that got blocked, and he let one sort of slip through his fingers that again was kind of cleared before it went into the net. And it just felt like a team that was unable to cope with the pressure of sort of needing the victory. Arteta has run on a very small squad, got rid of some important players, you know, Aubameyang being one, and even somebody like Saliba at Marseille, who's about to be sort of named as the young player of the year in France. He decided that he didn't want him around the club. And I think that small squad looks like it's going to cost them, because without Partey and without Tierney, you know, the team isn't as strong, and that they have struggled in recent weeks, even when they've been winning games. You know, they beat Leeds 2-1, and that was against 10 men, and, you know, it should have been more comfortable than it was. They went to West Ham, and I'm not sure they deserve to win, you know, that game either. So I think those defeats against Spurs and Newcastle were coming. You know, it's a young team, it's a young squad, but it looks like it's falling short. And I do think that their lack of numbers is a big concern. And let's not forget, they had no European football, sort of no FA Cup run either. So, the squad should maybe have been able to have coped, but they couldn't.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, really. A big game tonight for Liverpool, Stephen, but unfortunately for them, Mo Salah, Virgil van Dijk, Fabinho are out of tonight's game, and Andy Robertson is a doubt as well. Like, that's a lot of players.
Yeah, it's core group of players for this team and for the success of this team. They've been instrumental in everything that this team has done and succeeded in the last, since Klopp has been there. So, you know, you take them out of the equation, and it really does dampen how Liverpool play. They've strengthened defensively. So, you know, if you've got Matip and Konate, then that's a difference to what they didn't have when Van Dijk was injured. So, you know, they're a little bit better in the defensive. And then Tsimikas coming in left back, you think for Robertson, if I know Robertson is again another instrumental player, but he's got to be very confident after taking that penalty the weekend, so another player that can come in and hopefully be able to do a job for them. But I think everybody's hoping for them to win, just to make it go down to that last day. You want to see Liverpool see, you want to see the title being contended for, you know, even though I'm not a neutral, I'm a Spurs fan, you want to see the last day of the season, the top title being going for. And I actually covered the Wolves-Norwich game the weekend, and I was thinking, you know what, if Liverpool go into this game needing to make up goals, they could absolutely get them against Wolves, because Wolves were abysmal defensively. Norwich could have scored 5 in the first half against them. They were so bad, so lacking pace. And I was sitting in the game going, you know what, if Liverpool need to make up 7-8 goals in this game, they absolutely couldn't last this season as well, because defensively they were so bad. And I felt, you know, it could make a cracking end of the day. But I hope we get to a point where it's, I know for you want to be there. You want to be in contention. And it's not too greedy for Liverpool to be pushing on all fronts. But I think just to make as entertaining as it possibly can, you know, get the win tonight and go into the last day of the season still with something on the line.
Yeah, I said last night the Steven Gerrard flags have been stuck up on our windows over the last couple of days, and I'd say we'll remain there. Well, hopefully anyway, we'll be remaining there till the final day. Mark, is it too much to think that there would be a fairy tale ending like that?
Well, I mean, a fairy tale ending for some, not for the Man City fans. I think it is too much. Aston Villa, I don't think have really shown enough to suggest that they are capable of stopping Manchester City, or, you know, away from home at Villa Park. I think, you know, they can be an awkward team, and the crowd gets behind them. And there were times when they put Liverpool under pressure. We saw them put Tottenham under pressure as well. And even in the reverse fixture against City, that there were moments when they, you know, could play in a really feisty manner that Steven Gerrard wants them to, and they can get the ball forward to Watkins and Ings and maybe sort of score a goal. I just think that defensively, I wouldn't fancy them sort of keeping out sort of City, and, you know, a City team that's absolutely focused needs to win. That would be the biggest concern. I look at Villa. You know, Mings, I don't think he's had a particularly good season. I think his England spot is very much under pressure, probably from somebody like Eric Dyer. And, you know, that would be the biggest concern, I think, for Liverpool fans, hoping that Steven Gerrard can do something. You know, it's just I don't see them sort of keeping City to even one goal. I'm expecting City to score two plus, and then it becomes a really sort of tough ask, really, for Villa to go to the Etihad and maybe score two or three goals themselves.
Yeah, well, tonight anyway is the first one that they have to get over. Stephen, just while we have you, we spoke quite a bit last night about Jake Daniels and the fact that he is the first Premier League player or the first professional footballer in over 30 years to come out as gay. And a lot of people who've never played in a high-level football find that absolutely mind-boggling that nobody would be comfortable enough to stand up and say who they are. What's the dressing room culture like? What is it about football that you think keeps players from coming out or even the fact that they have to announce that they're gay?
I'm not sure it's the dressing room culture that would stop it, because when you're in a group with lads, and it is very boisterous and it's macho, and not that that's anything to do with it, but I'm not sure of a dressing room, because teammates are extremely supportive through thick and thin, and I don't think it'd be the dressing room culture. I would have expected it to be more the ridicule and the exposure. Football fans can be so cruel at times, and you know, you see with the racism that happens, and you know, one of the most courageous things I've seen is this young lad on the start of his journey as a professional footballer. You're going to get so many things that are going against you, and that will absolutely hand you on a football pitch. Regarding your ability, people question everything you do is scrutinized. For him to be able to take on the shoulders and have something like this and publicize it and, you know, make it aware, that's just going to invite more pressure I think it's going to galvanize everybody. Everybody in the football community is going to be around them. Everybody that's involved in football is going to help them and want them to succeed. But I'd say it's more what you would experience from the terraces and the fans, and just you're highlighting yourself for something that people could try and pick on and use against you. That I would say is that why people probably haven't come out and said it before, and why it's not been so, you know, public. I'd say that's more of it, because from my experience of football, the change room environments, the guys will go to war for you. Some they can be amazing and they can help you through some of your darkest moments, and I think there'll be always players in the pitch that would rely on that. And I think, you know, he'd be lucky, because players around them will really help him. And you see the outcry and the pouring of football support throughout the world have come out and supported him, which is amazing. So, yeah, it's such a courageous thing to have done.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to finish up now because we need to move on to racing. But before we do, the Liverpool team is in and it is not brimming with first team players. So you have the likes of Elliot Jones, Minamino in there. Jota and Firmino are there too. Milner, Gomez, Matip, Konate, Tsimikas and Alisson. So look, it's not that strong, but still I'm sure they will get the job done. Mark and Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break and then we're back with racing.
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on.
Racing.
Now, I am delighted to say that we are going to turn our attention to horse racing, and jockey Shane Cross joins me now on the line. Shane, I suppose I might as well tell people this is a pre-record because you will be racing for the evening in Sligo, but you might as well tell us, what have you got coming up?
Hi, Marie. Great to be here. So big weekend ahead of us, heading into Guineas weekend on the Curragh. Hopefully a lot of good rides to look forward to, and it's one of them weekends that we've been looking forward to for a while. It's a big day in the Irish calendar, so very much looking forward to it.
And what about in Sligo this evening?
Just a handful. I've got two up here for my boss Joseph, so two chances. Hopefully we can come out of here with a winner. It'll be worth it with a long spin up the road.
So that's your boss Joseph O'Brien?
Yes.
Someone that most people will be familiar with anyway. We'll get to him in a little while. Just tell us a little bit about yourself first, Shane. Like, how did you get into racing? Was it a dream that you always had? Did you grow up with horses? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Since I was young, there's always been horses, you know, around the place at home. My mum and dad were always in the industry. Before I was even born, my dad was a jockey in Ireland and England, and a little stint in America. So as we were growing up, there was always a pony or a horse out in the field. We were just thrown into it from day one. and once I was old enough, you know, was able to start riding out and never done show jumping or eventing or anything like that. It was always the thoroughbreds that were there. Slowly got into the pony racing, into the racing side of things, and yeah, just progressed the whole way up along until, you know, old enough to get a license and actually become a jockey.
It sounds like it was all fairly straightforward.
You could say so, but there's a lot of hard work that goes into it to kind of get to that stage, I suppose. My parents have been great. They supported me the whole way up along. You know, I done the guts of 4 or 5 years pony racing. You're driving from anywhere from Cork the whole way up to Donegal on Sundays for, you know, when we were young, only 12 or 13. So without them days, you know, you probably wouldn't be where I am today.
Yeah, there's a huge commitment from parents, all right, when children get into sport and want to pursue it. It's nearly a job on top of a job, really, just getting them around. So I imagine they're very proud of you now. You're still so young, but really moving in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly. They're great support, both of them. And I'm sure myself and my brother are doing them proud anyway.
So tell me a little bit about your brother then.
So Nathan's about just, he's 18 months older than me. He's still claiming at the moment. He works for William McCreary above in the Curragh.
Oh, yeah.
And he's actually flying this year. He's doing well for himself. And, so it's great to have, you know, your old brother, who we're very close together and riding against each other on a daily basis. You know, it's great for advice. I help him out. He helps me out. That's kind of the way it works. And, no, it's great to have a family member, you know, in the race, and the exact same as myself, being a jockey and doing well for himself.
So from what I can gather from just looking at pictures of you, you do seem quite tall. Is that the case?
Yeah, it is. It's probably not the most likely thing when you see a jockey. I'm a bit tall for the job, which leads to kind of weight issues and stuff. But I'm getting through it at the moment. It's difficult, but... you know, these days, jockeys are actually a lot taller. You don't really walk into a weight room and see your 5 foot jockeys anymore like you used to years ago. So that's probably one of the most difficult parts of the job. But once you have your diet and plan and just weight under control, you're okay.
It must be pressure, though. Just, does it weigh in your mind, or is it in the back of your head kind of all the time that you do have, is it fair to call it a bit of a disadvantage?
I presume it is. You know, a lot of, I'm not the only one that would struggle a bit. You know, you just constantly have to, obviously, part of your job is making weight, and if you can't do the weight, you won't be riding, you know. So that's probably one of the most important things, is just keeping tabs on your weight and making sure you can do weights every day. But with COVID, with the way COVID has gone, we started to get a little bit more of an allowance, an extra pound or two, which has helped us. So that's actually helping us at the moment, and I think it's going to stay in place for the future, which is great.
It really is. And from what I can gather as well, the kind of the S&C side of things and the sports science has came into racing quite a bit over the last few years. Like, would you do a lot of training just like to keep yourself in the shape that you need to be?
For sure. I'd probably be in the gym every morning before I go racing at some stage when I'm riding out. I might ride out for 3 or 4 laps or whatever before I go racing, depending on what time racing is on. Get to the gym, have a quick sweat, and get ready to go to the races. But we have a lot of people that have been in the industry now helping us with food plans and, you know, every sort of aspect, like mental health, and you have your fitness and stuff. So we have loads of help there for what we're doing, which is great.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of it comes down to just being educated, really, on doing the right things.
Exactly. No, you said it. Yeah, you know, once you have an idea what you're meant to be doing and you have someone, you know, there beside you telling you what to do, is a big help.
So when I was doing my research, I got onto Jane Mangan about you so she could give me the background, and she said that your successes on State of Rest and Pretty Gorgeous have really helped to elevate your career. Is that the case?
Yeah, they were two brilliant days. To get, for any jockey to get horses like them in their whole career, you'd be lucky, and I'm a very lucky man to have gotten them so early. Pretty Gorgeous was brilliant just nearly 2 years ago now. She gave me my first Group 1 winner in Newmarket in England, which was a huge day. and State of Rest has come along now, and he just looks to be a superstar for the rest of the year. But yeah, with horses like that, that's what every jockey wants in their career, is have something like that that they can look forward to for the rest of the year.